Well, good morning. Like I said earlier, I am so incredibly excited that each and every one of you are here, whether you're here in person or checking us out online. As we embark on this series that we have been in called Crazy Like Us. If you've been around here for any amount of time, maybe this morning you walked in wondering this question, Ben, why are you and Annette sort of flying solo as staff here at CORE? The rest of our staff, be it Josh and Dez and Krista, find themselves up in Michigan this weekend. We have a high school retreat in which almost 20 of our high school students are joining about 50 high school students for a weekend retreat. And so they're there leading worship and communicating. And we are so ridiculously excited about what we believe that's going to bring about in the future of our high school students for their lives. And so because of that, we find ourselves here trudging forward with part two of this series. And I thought this morning it was no better time than for me to start in this way. You see, every once in a while, I want to stop and acknowledge just how grateful I am that you are here and how much of a privilege it is to be able to share this room and this place and even this stage with each and every one of you. Because around here, I never want to be naive enough not to acknowledge this reality. That each and every one of you didn't have to come back after at the movies. You didn't have to come back after you walked away from the church or you walked away from God years ago. You didn't have to come back after the hurt. You didn't have to come back after the pandemic was over. And you certainly didn't have to come back after you heard what we were talking about throughout this series last week. But you did. And we're so incredibly grateful for that because we acknowledge that it wasn't an easy step for you to take. You see, we hope that every time you walk into this place, that you understand and see the truth that we pride ourselves and strive to be a safe place where it's okay to not be okay. Where you can walk through those doors and not have it all together and have a whole lot of questions and feel like you don't have life figured out and your life may feel as if it's falling apart. And in this place, you'll fit right in. Because what you'll find is a group of people who find themselves in the exact same spot. A group of broken people who are just trying to figure this thing called life out as well. We hope that every time you walk through those doors, you find that this is a safe place where you can belong before you believe. That this is a safe place that you can walk into to hear a dangerous and challenging message. And that last sentiment that we hope with all of our heart that you feel every time you walk into this place, we hope that that sentiment resonates in every single one of our hearts, maybe no more than in a series like this. Because in a series like this, what I acknowledge is that every word that I speak throughout this three-part series has the ability to come across as offensive. And here's why. Because throughout this series, we are attempting to teach all of us how to do something that many of us believe we already know how to do. And yet what statistics would show us is that we probably don't. You see, throughout this entire series, we are attempting to have a conversation that revolves around teaching every single one of us what it looks like for the sake of our present and for the sake of our future to be generous. And if you walked into this place and you find yourself wondering what generosity really looks like, the way in which we started this series last week is by acknowledging this difficult-to-swallow truth that generosity isn't completely encompassed in simply random acts of giving. Now, if you partake in random acts of giving, and we have a church that is absolutely incredible at that, that when needs arise, when we walk through Generosity Month, that you guys step forward and you see needs and you meet needs, and you do an incredible job at that, and that's great, and that's something that should never stop. But what if generosity was deeper than that? What if generosity was bigger than that? And throughout this conversation, as we challenge every single one of us, myself included, what I hope you believe about my heart is this, is that we wanted to have this conversation simply because of one thing. It's because we want better for your future. We want more for your future. that this is a series we're doing not because we want something from you, but because we want something for you. And as we move through this series, what we've acknowledged every step of the way is this, is that you, if you haven't found generosity to be a part of your DNA, it is in no way, shape, or form because you're a bad person. It's simply because for many of us, we've never been taught what generosity really is. And furthermore, as we've moved through our lives as kids and teenagers and maybe even young adults, within the houses that we've grown up in, generosity has never been something that's been modeled for us. But in order for us to move towards a life that leaves a legacy from this day forward for the people around us and the people coming after us, it requires us to understand what generosity is and what generosity isn't. And we started this journey last week by debunking these myths that every single one of us carry as we look at our personal assets, be it time, be it money, our finances within our lives and our time here on earth. And what we began talking about was this, is that generosity isn't predicated on spontaneity. Oftentimes we sort of derive this myth that if we want to be generous, we simply wait for a need to be presented in front of us and someone comes and they guilt us or they inspire us into a need that is there, and then we step forward and we meet it. And that's what generosity looks like. But what if generosity wasn't simply about spontaneity? And what if generosity really wasn't about the amount? And what if it wasn't about excess in our lives and being generous from what was left over? And what if generosity wasn't even reserved for those of us who are rich? You see, last week we began to define what generosity really is, and I hope you didn't go looking in Webster for this definition, because it's a definition that's been created around what we believe with all of our heart generosity really looks like and how it plays out in every single one of our stories. And this is the definition that we gave last week. It was this, that we believe with all of our hearts that generosity is the, and you'll see three key words there, it's the premeditated. That generosity is actually thought out in advance, that it is actually thought through, that it is actually planned for, that generosity is calculated. It is something that, hang on, y'all, you may not have come into church this morning expecting the B word to be thrown out in church, but it's about to be, that generosity is actually something that we budget for. Some of y'all were holding your breath on what the world he's talking about. That we budget for it, and that we calculate it out, and that as a couple, as a family, we sit down and we determine what generosity looks like for us, and then we calculate that within our finances and within our paycheck of what it looks like, and that generosity is designated. That we get to choose where our money goes. That our money doesn't tell us what to do. We tell our money what to do. That we are the masters of our money and our stuff and not the other way around. And so we get to choose where we want to make the difference and where we want to use our generosity to its greatest potential. And then lastly, maybe my favorite word of them all is not one for you to fill in. It's the emancipation. It's the premeditated, calculated, designated emancipation of our personal assets. Last week, I talked about this reality of taking us back to American history class for that word. This emancipation is the freeing of our stuff. And the reason why the freeing of our stuff is so important is because when we free our stuff, we free ourselves from our stuff. That the pecking order gets back to the way that it was designed to be. And our stuff no longer is the master of us, but we become the master of our stuff. And living under that kind of freedom sets us up to have a future that is better than the present or the past that we've been living. Not tied to anything or anyone, but tied to being able to live out a new story, to leaving a legacy behind us that literally changes people's lives. But that isn't all that it changed. You see, maybe you walked through those doors, and the moment that you hear the topic of generosity or money or time begin to be discussed within conversation, the number one thought that rises into your thought process is this question. What's in it for me? Like, Ben, I'm all good with doing something that makes an impact, but what I want to make sure of is that by taking a step out there and doing something good for someone else, that ultimately it's not going to harm me. And so what's in it for me? And if that's the question that rises to the surface as we have this discussion about generosity, I've got some incredible news for you. Is that throughout this series, as we take steps towards generosity in our lives, with our time and our finances, there actually is something incredible in it for you. In fact, last week I started this series by making a promise to each and every one of us. That if we were willing to engage in this conversation and take steps towards generosity, that when generosity becomes a part of the habits of our lives and becomes a part of our DNA, when we become generous, this is what is in it for us. Is that what follows on the back end of us taking steps towards generosity is that within our finances, we become people who give more, save more, and consume less. That these are the financial consequences that follow our courageous step of becoming generous with our lives. Is that we find ourselves experiencing a lifestyle and spending habits that now have us consuming less, saving more, and giving more. And here's the cool part, and I didn't talk about this last week. Is that our ability to be generous actually balances us out regardless of which side of the pendulum we find ourselves on. And here's what I mean. For some of us, we're like, all right, Ben, that resonates with me because I can look at my life and when I get honest enough, what I recognize is I really like shoes or I really like cars. And so I have some consuming habits in my life that may not be as healthy as they should be. And I could use a little help in swinging the pendulum towards what is healthy and saving more and consuming less in my life. But maybe for some of us, we find ourselves on the opposite end of the spectrum. That there's a select few of us in which what comes natural to us is saving really well, sometimes too well, and hoarding our stuff. That we find ourselves sitting on a checking account that's 2 years worth of wages. And the ability of generosity doesn't just swing us from overspending and undersaving. It also swings us to healthier habits from over-saving and under-consuming or hoarding with our lives. That it has this ability to balance us out and make us healthier no matter where we fall on this spectrum. And so in our lives, we automatically experience, that was my promise, these incredible external consequences when we take steps towards generosity. But the good news is that isn't all that's promised to us if we are willing to engage in generosity. What we also experience in our lives is something incredible internally. That there is actually an incredible internal benefit in our lives when we partake and take courageous steps towards generosity. And it's something that a couple thousand years ago, a guy by the name of Paul, as he was saying his goodbyes to a group of people, the church in Ephesus, saying his goodbyes because he knew he was about to go to Rome to be arrested, to be jailed, and most likely to die right in the middle of that jail cell. And so this was the last time he would see some of his best friends. And as they were saying goodbye to each other, he turns around and he gives them sort of this parting shot, this one thing that you cannot miss for the sake of your future. That if you simply do this, you will reap the rewards of it, and generations after you will reap the rewards of it. And this was the parting shot in the midst of the tears and the goodbyes and the hugs. This is what Paul decided to leave these people with. He brings them back to the words Jesus had shared just a few years earlier. In Acts chapter 20, verse 35, here is how this moment in time finishes. Paul says this: "You should remember the words of the Lord Jesus. It is more blessed to give than to receive." Or if you grew up in church, I apologize, it is more blessed to give than to receive. You see, there was this promise that came along with ordering our lives around giving rather than receiving. And the promise that came with this, straight from the mouth of our Savior, straight from the mouth of our Creator, was this: you will experience, what's the H word that he puts in there? You will experience happiness when you order your life around giving rather than receiving. You will be blessed, is what he says. And oftentimes we read that word blessed and we think of blessing through the lens of like, okay, I'm going to get back more than I've given out. And yet when we look at the Greek word, that's what this passage was originally written in, when we look at the Greek word for blessed, what we see is a completely different definition. Is that the definition of this Greek word is actually literally defined as to find happiness from reaping what you sow. You know, essentially what Jesus was saying is that in your life, you will find happiness when you live a lifestyle of generosity. When you live a lifestyle that's predicated on knowing the power in giving as opposed to simply receiving. That when you look at your life outside of just the moments in time, because we all know when we look at moments in time, right, it surely seems like it's a whole lot more fun to receive than it is to give. Am I right? But when we look at the entire story and the habits that we're creating, the way in which we live our lives and the DNA that defines us and who we are, when over time we consistently create a lifestyle of generosity, giving as opposed to receiving, that's when we will experience a happiness, a contentment that lasts. And isn't that what we're all looking for? Deep down, isn't that what we all crave? A happiness and contentment that lasts? And yet the problem that arises in our pursuit of happiness and contentment when it comes to our finances is this. Is that when we think about our finances, one of the last words that come to mind is happiness. Am I right? Is that in all reality, when we think about our finances, a word that more accurately describes our emotions are words like stress and worry. That's what we feel when we think about money. That's what we feel when some dude on stage starts talking about money. There ain't a whole lot of happiness happening in the room right now. Am I right? Because money scares us. Money stresses us out. Money worries us. And yet, what if there was a way for us to change the way we looked at money first in order for us ultimately to change what we do with our money? And I thought in order to help us this morning on this pursuit and within this conversation, that it would be fun for us to do some visual aid. And so I thought it would be fun for us to do a little diagram. And we're going to take some journeys around this diagram as we move through the remainder of our time together. And we're going to define what this looks like oftentimes in every single one of our lives as it pertains to our emotions and our thought process around our finances. And so here's what it looks like. You see, for many of us, as we think about our money, the number one emotion that comes to our mind is worry. And I'm going to say something, and some of you are going to think that what I say is ridiculously controversial and ridiculously wrong, but over our time left, I'm going to help convince you of it as well. You see, the reason for many of us, 90% of us, I would say, worry about money is because we have never along our lifespan been taught about generosity. And you're saying, wait, Ben, that is controversial, and it sounds downright dumb, actually. You're telling me that I'm going to worry less about money if I give more of my money away. So I'll have less for myself, and you're telling me that that's not going to create more stress and more worry. That doesn't make sense. Well, let me explain it to you. You see, in our lives, when we experience worry at the hands of our finances, we have this natural reaction. This tendency that rises to the surface that, dare I say, and y'all buckle in for just a second and give me as much grace as possible because I'm speaking from my own male and my own heart as we journey through this as well. But we have this tendency as Americans that when we find the worry and the stress rising up inside of us as it pertains to our money, there is this habit that begins to spring forth, and the habit is that we begin to spend more than we make. We worry about whether we'll have enough. Will I have enough to get married? Will I have enough to finally move out of my parents' house? Will I have enough to send my kids to college? Will I have enough to eat tomorrow? And in the midst of all of these worries about whether we'll have enough, our natural reaction is we start to cope by spending as much as or more than we make. And when we spend as much as or more than we make, the only thing within our American culture that makes it possible for us to do that is for us to make the choice to go into debt. We take out a loan. We take out a lease. We use that little plastic in our back pocket. And it's like, oh, the money just keeps coming. Every time I swipe, I get something new. You get a car, and you get a car. And so we swipe, and we swipe, and we swipe. And all of a sudden, overspending in our lives more than what we make brings about debt into our lives. And what we've all experienced on the back end of the debts and the leases and the credit card balances in our life is that ultimately that overspending leads to a place in which we have no financial margin, right? We are tied to a lender. We are tied to making that payment, or things go really bad really quickly. And so we find ourselves ultimately having no financial margin in our lives to be able to do what we want to do or do what we feel like we've been called to do. We have no financial margin to feel like we can make a difference with the assets that have been entrusted to us. And ultimately, right, here's what happens. When we experience no margin in our lives, no margin within our finances, what happens is the vicious cycle begins again. And with no margin, what happens is we experience stress and worry. And when we have stress and worry, where do we go to? The mall. Amazon. Sorry. The boxes just keep showing up on the front porch. And when we spend more than what we make, we go into debt. And when we go into debt, we find ourselves with no margin. And when we do that, we find ourselves right back at a little bit more stress and a little bit more worry. But essentially what's taking place beneath the surface is that there's a mindset that's contributing to all of these things. There's a mindset that in this entire diagram is really the underlying sort of hurt and reasoning behind why each of these are taking place. You see, when it comes to our worry and our stress around finances, right, we've already defined this. Our greatest worries and our greatest stresses are about our ability to future consume. Future consumption is our greatest worry. Will I have enough tomorrow to do this? Will I have enough tomorrow to feed my kids? Will I have enough tomorrow to move out of my parents' basement? Will I have enough tomorrow to get married? Will I have enough tomorrow to get that car that I want? Will I have enough tomorrow to send my kids to college? And we worry about our future lives and our ability to consume in our future. And ultimately, when we begin to worry about whether we'll have enough for our future and we begin to engage in this spending more than we make, essentially what's taking place is we're consuming more than what we can afford. We're getting more for me than what we can financially afford with the paycheck that we're making or the income that we have. And ultimately, when we consume more than we afford, there is this word that should be attached to the front end of debt that we don't often use, but it perfectly describes what the debt is. You see, the debt that we engage in is not just debt, it's consumer debt. It's debt on the back end of me getting something for me that I want, right? And so we engage in this consumer debt in our life, and ultimately the consumer debt leads us to having no margin for the very thing that we worried about in the first place, no margin for future consumption. The thing that causes the greatest stress and the greatest worry in our minds when it comes to our money, we have now set ourselves up to have no margin to do it the way that we want to do it. And yet for all of us, the vicious American cycle just continues to go round and round and round. And it's the merry-go-round that every single one of us, myself included, find it hard to hit the emergency button and to hop off. To get off this ride that just keeps going around and around and around. But what drives this is a mindset. A mindset that's evident in every single word in these explanations. What drives this is a consumer mentality. Is my want to continue to consume and consume and consume. It's the mindset that if it comes to me, it's for me. If it comes to me, it's for me. My money was always designed to be all about my consumption. But let me ask you a question. What would it take? How much money would it take to stop spending everything we make or more than we make? 10% more? 15% more? You walked into your job tomorrow morning and they slapped on you a 20% raise. That'd fix it, right? That we would finally stop spending everything that we would make. And the answer to that question is most likely not. Because if you're anything like me, what ultimately happens is this. As my income increases, my way of living just increases along with it.
and I find a way to spend everything I make or more than I make every step along the way. And the reason why is because this practice isn't really a money issue. This practice of spending more than what we make oftentimes is a self-control issue. Let me ask you this. How much more money would it take to stop carrying a balance on your credit card? How much more money would it take to pay cash for every vehicle you purchased? How much more money would it take to stop leasing vehicles altogether? 10% more? 15% more? A new job that gave you a 25% increase in pay. Would that do it? Again, the answer is probably no. The answer is that it would probably take more money than you would ever get at one time in your life to eradicate this problem. Why? Because consumer debt isn't a money issue. Ultimately, it comes back to a contentment issue. That the 13 isn't making me happy anymore, but I'm dead set on the fact that the 15 will. That this thing isn't as new or doesn't have as much technology or isn't as big as the one I saw there in the store. And that's the reason I'm not happy on Sunday afternoons. If I just had a little bit bigger one of those that I was watching the game on, then I would finally experience contentment and happiness in my life. You see, ultimately, debt comes back to a contentment issue. Now, if you're a Christ follower, I want to ask you one more question. See, when it comes to all of these, spending more than what we make is a self-control issue. Debt is a contentment issue. No margin in our lives won't be fixed by an amount of money because it's not really a money issue. Essentially, it's a discipline issue in our lives. That this is what's always been modeled for us, and this is what we think is normal, and this is what everybody else is doing, and so we just do what everybody else is doing, regardless of if it's healthy for me or not. But if you're a Christ follower in the room, I want to ask you one more question. And if you're not a Christ follower in the room, you're more than welcome to play along. In fact, kind of like what we said earlier, man, we are so glad that you're here. In fact, everything we do it for you, and we built this place for you. And we want you to be able to play along because a couple thousand years ago, there was this guy that we follow by the name of Jesus. And he started teaching and he had people that were listening to him. And he said, no, you can play along. You can belong before you believe in me. And he had a whole lot of people that were sitting there listening that didn't really believe he was who he said he was. In fact, dare I say, nobody really believed that Jesus was who he said who he was. There was nobody that was really following Jesus 2,000 years ago. And you're like, Ben, come on. What do you mean? The disciples, the apostles, what do you mean? There were a whole lot of people that were following Jesus. No. Here's how I know that. There was nobody on Sunday morning waiting at the tomb going, 10, 9, 8, 7. There were a whole lot of people who were listening to Jesus and taking in what he was saying, because Jesus invited them to just belong before they believed. But if you're a Christ follower, what would it take? What's the amount of money it would take for you to stop worrying about your money? What would it take for the stress to evaporate when it comes to your thought process around your finances? How much more would it take? 10%, 20%, 50% more? You see, last week I told you a story about Krista and I. When we first got married, I was just starting in ministry. I was making less than $30,000 a year. She was a senior in college, driving about an hour each way to get her degree. And we find ourselves, or have found ourselves, in places where we have been making 300% more than what we were making when we first got married. And I told you this story about how we made this determination that generosity was going to come first no matter what. And I look back and I have no idea how I kept the lights on. And yet God was there and he provided and he sustained through all of that. And yet here we find ourselves at times making 300% more than what we made when we first made this decision. And you know what tug still exists inside of my heart? Worry. I worry about whether we'll have enough. I worry whether we're going to make it. I worry about future consumption in my life. And the reason that I keep worrying is because worry really isn't about money at all. Christ followers, worry isn't a money issue. Worry is a spiritual issue. Y'all okay? Because if you look at what Jesus said and what was written throughout the New Testament, never once will you find Jesus ever say, if you want to eradicate worry from your life, just save a little bit more. Just get out of debt. If you want to eradicate worry from your life, just make a little bit more money and that will get rid of the worry. Jesus never said that. Because what Jesus knew was this, is that when we experience worry at the hands of our finances, it's because we've shifted our trust and we have become people who trust in riches instead of the one who richly provides. Our worry is derived from us shifting our trust to our riches from the one who richly provides. That's where our worry is birthed. That's where it lives. That's where it comes from. That's why it's a spiritual issue for every single one of us. And being able to shift how we use our money will only happen if we become people who are capable of shifting how we see our money. And if you could get honest with yourself and you look at this diagram, what we'd all be forced to admit is that this is crazy. This is the crazy American way of looking at and handling our finances. This is normal. And dare I say, wouldn't we all be healthier if we were capable of admitting that normal just isn't working? That maybe, just maybe, there was a better kind of crazy that led towards a better future, a better legacy, and a bigger impact on the people around us. Now, I know what you're thinking. Some of you are sitting there, and you're like, Ben, I still don't get it. Why in the world did you say at the end of last week that if we had a middle school or a high school or a college age students that we had to get them here this week, that they could not miss this message, that this message was going to set them up for the rest of their lives to live a different life? Like, Ben, I came in here expecting that this was going to be like budgeting 101, and this was going to be ridiculously practical, and this was going to be like a class that you were going to move my teenagers through, and this ain't it at all. What gives? Here's what gives, y'all, is that until we as humanity start to learn to look at our money different, how we use our money will never change. And as I look at my life, if I could have changed the way I looked at my money at 14, 16, 18, when I had no money, when I was getting my first job, my life and the way I look at and manage my finances at 36 would be drastically different. And I think every single one of us who fall into the slightly older than young adult population would admit that as well. That I wish I would have looked at my money in this crazy American cycle a little bit differently when I was a little bit younger, because it would have changed the way I did things. It would have changed the way I worried about my money. It would have changed the way I had stress about how I manage my finances. That things would have changed and I would have begun a whole lot earlier in my life to live a whole lot differently. That's, y'all, why it's so imperative for your students to get this, understand this, hear this, continue to have conversation around this, because until we change the way we look at our money, we will never change the way we use our money. You see, what we have to understand is this truth, that more money does not generate more self-control. More money will never generate more discipline. And more money certainly doesn't create more contentment in our lives. It just doesn't work that way. All of us have tried that, and we still find ourselves falling short in every single one of those areas. And maybe more than anything, more money will never eradicate worry. In fact, what most of us would attest to is this. As we have made more, we've actually encountered a whole lot more worry and a whole lot more stress in our lives. Right? Is that more money never gets rid of these emotions, these negative emotions and negative practices in our lives. But what derails us from living our life under this truth is what I like to call this normalcy around the consumption assumption. And you know what the consumption assumption is? The consumption assumption is simply this. It's a belief that if it comes to me, it was always meant for me. If it comes to me, it was meant solely for me. That's the consumption assumption that we've seen modeled all around us. The normal American way. That if it comes to me, it's for me. And yet generous people, for just a second, lean in. Generous people always find a way to push past the consumption assumption. To see the lie that lies beneath the consumption assumption. Why is it so important to rid ourselves of that mindset in our lives? Because when we don't, there is something that seeps into our lives and into our heart that spreads like wildfire, that affects the way we look at everything, the way we operate in every scenario of our life. It's a word that Jesus busted out when he was talking about this very topic to describe what happens within us when we operate under the consumption assumption, that my life is always about consuming more for me and owning more and getting more. In Luke chapter 12, this is what Jesus said. He said, beware. Guard against every kind of greed. This thing that seeps into our lives when we operate under the consumption assumption is greed. That everything was meant for me, and in order to have a better life, I have to get more for me. Jesus says, beware of buying into the lie of greed in your life. Why? Because your life, your legacy, your impact is not measured by how much you own. The contentment that you experience on this earth will never be measured by how much you own. And greed is the act of living like it's all about me. And here's the kicker. When we live that way, we will never have enough. When we live like life is all about me, the finish line always moves. That when we arrive at the place where we think one day, if we just get to there, that'll be enough. By the time we get there, the finish line has already moved, and we will never have enough. Because most financial angst in our life is predicated around me wanting what I can't get, not needing what I don't have. Hello. Most of the financial angst that I experience in my life is the result of me not wanting what I can't get, not me not having what I need. It's around this consumer mentality that in order for me to be happy, I have to have more, consume more. It's not really about whether or not I'll eat tomorrow. It's rarely about whether I'll keep the lights on tomorrow or be warm enough to not freeze to death throughout the winter. Most of the time, our financial angst is centered on me not being able to get what I want. That new thing, that bigger thing. And the reality is in our life, when we approach our lives and our finances like that, we find ourselves traveling this similar road to a guy that Jesus told a story about. He told a story about this rich guy, and we find it right after the verse that he talks about greed taking root in our lives and us not measuring our lives by what we have. And here is the story he tells about this rich guy, starting in verse 16. And he told them, all these people who were sitting around listening to what Jesus had to say, he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. And when you read this like me, you're like, here we go again. The rich just keep getting richer. The rich guy had another rich year. And as he has another rich year, he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store all of my riches. I have more than what I can possibly consume in my life. And then he said, this is what I'll do. And do you know what the rich man did? He did what he has always done. Because he was looking at his money in the same way he had always looked at his money. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. You fool, you've looked at your life and your finances as if it's defined by how much you have. On this very night, as your life is demanded from you, who will get everything that you've prepared for yourself? Under this consumption assumption that if it comes to you, it was always meant just for you. And then he says this, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves. This is something that is true, regardless of time, that 2,000 years later, it's still as true and just as relevant for your story and my story. This is how it will be for those who store up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. And you're like, whoop, there it is. I knew it was coming, right? He puts in there, those who are rich towards God. Here we go. This is all about giving to the church because God somehow is going to say he wants or he needs my money. Let's just take that off the table, y'all. God doesn't need our money. When Jesus writes in here this one phrase, being rich towards God is how you set yourself up to live a legacy that's about generosity. Do you know what he's talking about? He's not talking about giving my money directly to God. In fact, we see proof of this again and again and again through what Jesus says, through what we see guys like James and Paul write over and over again. You know how they define richness towards God? Check this out. Pure and genuine religion in the sight of God our Father is helping widows and orphans in their distress. That is one of the many ways in which God defines what richness towards him looks like. It's about sharing what we have been given with other people. In the midst of their hurt, in the midst of their need, in the midst of their brokenness, richness towards God is about us loving others well. It's about us loving his creation well. That's what God was talking about. If you want to love me well, love what I've created well. Be generous towards what I've created. Help what I've created. Help what I love. That is what he talks about. He makes it pretty clear time and time again. Richness is about giving what you have to others. And the way in which we get there is by understanding that generous people don't assume it's theirs to consume. Generous people don't assume it's theirs to consume because generous people understand that if it can be taken away from me someday, it was never really mine anyway. Did you catch that? Generous people understand if it can be taken away from me someday, it was never really mine anyway. And just in case we haven't noticed, it will be taken away from all of us someday. And typically, for most of us in our story, we learn this in one of two ways. Either one, we find ourselves losing it all before we reach the end, the house gets foreclosed upon, or we go through that nasty settlement in which we lose it all to an ex, and we realize that we were never really going to have it for forever anyways. Or two, we lose a parent, and we have to walk into their house and go through all of their stuff. Everything that they stored up in the closet or in their attic or in their basement, and we go through it and we begin to realize that they didn't take this with them. They weren't able to take this with them. If we're going to lose it someday, it was never really ours anyways. And from that moment forward, right, what many of us do, if you're anything like me, is you make the determination, like, I'm not going to keep all the crap that my parents kept around and do this to my kids in the same way they did it to me, and having to go through this giant cleaning out process of them keeping and hoarding everything from their entire lives. And you see, the reality is there's this realization that needs to happen, this mindset that needs to happen that Jesus was trying to get at. That if you're not going to be able to keep it all anyways, why miss the chance to be able to choose who you give it away to now? Why miss the chance to be able to make an impact with what you have now? If you're going to lose it all someday, why not be generous with it this day? And it was like Jesus was setting the table for this reality that needed to take place in every single one of us. That generous people have the mindset when it comes to their money of managers, not owners. If it comes to me, it isn't just for me, because it was never really mine to begin with. I'm just an incredible manager of what God has entrusted to me. That what comes to me was meant for me to make a difference in the world around me. That's what a manager looks at life and their finances through the lens of. That if it comes to me, it was meant for me to make a difference on the world around me. Because it's not mine anyways. I'm just managing it. I'm just stewarding it. And the reality is that in order for us to make changes in what we do, we have to first change how we see and break this stranglehold at 14, 16, 18, 20, 45, 55, that if it comes to me, it was always meant just for me. And to realize that that diagram is crazy. And I'm tired of doing crazy in a bad way. And I'm ready to do crazy in a good way. Let me finish with this challenge, and I promise it'll be quick. For many of us, we look back at our lives, and what we'd be forced to admit is this, is that we haven't always gotten it right when it comes to the way in which we look at and the way in which we use our finances. And yet for many of us in this room, either now or later in our lives, at some point, there will be people who look up to us and are watching our example. For some of us right now, we have kids or grandkids in our lives who are starting to shape their perspective and develop that lens in which they view their money and their stuff through. And this conversation of us shifting away from the crazy American way is a conversation that was meant to live on within your households and your circle of influences. Because as people watch you, one of the things I like to say is more is caught than taught. They're not just watching what you say, they're watching the way in which you live, the way in which you make that shift in your own story and in your own finances from this day forward. And maybe you haven't always gotten it right up until this point. But what if all of those mistakes could be useful as teaching moments within your kids' and your grandkids' lives as well? There's a guy I know that loves to say this: everybody has a purpose, even if it's to be a bad example. And it's okay to use yourself as a bad example to set your kids, your grandkids up to have a better life, to have a better future, to have better finances than what you ever did, to be more generous than what you've been up until this point, and to make a greater impact with their life. And if you're still asking the question, well, what's in it for me then, Ben? Well, we'll take this caveat. Not only will you be setting them up for a better life in the future, but you'll also be setting them up to have more money for when you are old and you can't take care of yourself. There you go. This is the opportunity that we have that lies out in front of us. to teach our kids, but also to recognize it's not too late for me. It's not too late for you to stop living in the crazy American cycle and to start being crazy in a good way. To start living a life that the people around us exclaim, I'd like to be crazy like that. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, throughout this series, I just keep coming back to this reality. This truth that we do a series like this because we have a God who has put on display what true generosity looks like. A God who has given more than we deserve. A God who has given more than I could ever earn. And you did it 2,000 years ago by generously giving of your Son to take my place and what I deserved. But the fact of the matter is that it wasn't just this once-in-a-lifetime thing that you did and sending your Son 2,000 years ago, but this act of generosity that defines who you are and how much you love us has been something that you have been putting on display every day since. That you've been consistently extending a grace that I don't deserve and couldn't earn every day from then till now. A mercy. A love. You went first, God. And ultimately, we make the courageous choice that we want to follow your lead. It spurs us to break ourselves from the consumption assumption that if it comes to me, it's all for me, and to begin to view our lives and our finances through the lens of a manager, not an owner. And when we do that, our generosity begins to produce something in and through us that changes our world and changes the world. But changing what we do will never happen unless we first change how we think. Until we first change how we see our money. And so God, in our lives, may that happen. May we be courageous enough to stop the crazy cycle and to start something new. It's in your name that we pray.